It's a beautiful sunny spring morning here in Rome, and with the pines on the hilltop behind me, the sound of birdsong, and despite the traffic, it does feel a little bit like stepping into a Respighi tone poem. I'm north of Rome's Villa Borghese in the Parco della Musica. This is an amphitheatre, really, which as you approach it seems to have three huge metal-skinned armadillos in the park huddled together. Three separate concert halls designed by superstar Italian architect Renzo Piano, opened in 2002. The Sala Petrassi is on one side, designed for chamber music. The middle one is the Sala Sinopoli. The big hall is the Sala Santa Cecilia, and I'm on the outdoor balcony that runs between the halls, looking down into the ancient Roman Republican ruins that were discovered when the building began and helped actually dictate the layout of the structures, and connecting these concert halls with ancient Rome. And that seems particularly appropriate this week, as the Santa Cecilia Hall is playing the part of a pharaoh's palace, Egyptian temples, and housing a spectacular victory parade in Thebes. It's standing in for Cairo's Opera House on Christmas Eve in 1871. It's the setting for a new recording of Verdi's opera Aida. And we're in the home of Antonio Pappano and the Santa Cecilia Orchestra and Chorus, with a pretty spectacular cast headed by Jonas Kaufmann and Anya Harteris. They're in Rome for a week with the recording team from Warner Classics to make the kind of grand studio opera you may have thought no one could afford to make anymore. So let's go inside and hear for ourselves how it's all coming together.
Then you have the space that you need. Okay? That's all. You're fine. Stesso.
I'm in Antonio Pappano's dressing room. He's just been working out the next scene he's recording on the piano in here. But you have to spend so long planning how you're going to arrange the takes, how you're going to sort of make this mosaic, which will become the completed recording in the right order. But you're recording, you rehearse record in the wrong order. You have to maintain the atmospheres, you have to maintain those tensions.
Yes, but I've made a lot of opera recordings, and I've been playing around with this piece for 40 years. Been playing it on the piano for at least 40 years. And so I've lived with it for a long time, and I know also in the editing process, which is so important, how to knit it together. Meanwhile, trying to include the singer's best bits. So you notice I first do a long take, then I rehearse more in detail, which could be quite a bit of stopping and starting. And then slowly I build the performance layer by layer so that we're getting longer and longer stretches so that the performance is actually being created. It's a wonderful process. It has nothing to do with rehearsing for a live performance, but it's another way of doing things. And it is a genuine process that's been going on for a long time, and I just adore it.
Why do we hesitate?
Because you're doing the delays, I'm not doing them.
No, I'm sorry. No, it's two. I'm an asshole. Two.
No, that's not what we've been doing.
Okay, sorry. No, I'd love to do it in tempo. Is that easier?
No, I like what you're doing.
Okay.
I think it's fantastic. Okay. Let's keep doing it. Just don't go without me, that's all. Okay, very easy.
Tu amonas rom tu il re numi che dissi non è vero sogno delirio è questo.
You find me backstage with the warrior general himself, Radames, Jonas Kaufmann. Jonas, the Radames we meet in the first scene, he's a real idealist, but like every member of the cast at this point, he also has a secret.
Yes, he has a secret, and a big one. He's in love with the slave, which is obviously not the right person to be in love with or to actually think about marriages of some kind. But he has this idea, his plan, that as long as Amneris doesn't read his mind and doesn't catch him too early, because Amneris, it's her personal slave, Aida, and once he comes back from the battlefield and he's the hero, then he can ask to actually marry her. But unfortunately, things don't work out the way he expected it.
But the idealism of the character and the way it's put under test is fascinating, because you have the relationship with Ramphis and the priests selecting you as the leader of the army, and then you're harbouring this secret the whole time, and you can feel the tension. Verdi establishes it so quickly, all the characters and all the tensions and all the secrets, just in that first scene.
It's true, yes. I mean, in the very, very first scene, he's very happy that Ramphis obviously thinks positive about him, and he's the one who's going to whisper the name of the guy leading the army towards Ethiopia, and of course he wouldn't say any word to give up his secret. But then immediately afterwards we see him after the aria, where he is in, let's say, he's dreaming himself away into a possible future where he comes back and can tell Aida himself, I've been fighting, I've been winning only for you, because I want to have you next to me on the throne. And you are actually in the highest throne, in this, next to the sky. And so he's crazily in love with her, obviously. And then comes Amneris, and she immediately spots that there's something wrong with him, because she wants to talk about love, about his feelings, and he doesn't respond at all. And once Aida enters the room, she sees how I'm changing and how much I'm staring at her. And of course, it's not been for long a secret, unfortunately. And from that moment on, Amneris understands that it's actually a rival and not only a slave, and she wants to become friend with her, and is so super nice, and come here, and you're in tears, oh, you can cry out all your sorrows on my shoulder. And
you have to do all this in a concert hall, no costumes, no scenery. Does it mean there's less adrenaline? There's a very different way of approaching these scenes and these relationships when you have the microphones in front of you.
No, I don't think so. I mean, it's written so perfectly, I think it's just there. There's no way that you could possibly leave out all these tiny little details. It's all there, and all the mystery, even the bits you see, it's actually a very positive side when you do an opera and concert version. Even the whole marching and all the famous elephants and whatever, they never appear on stage, which means the audience can concentrate on the fantastic music. When you have it staged, the chorus is here and there and there, it's very difficult to hold everything together. So at the end of the day, especially the big scenes, the concertati, let's say the target is that it didn't fall apart. Here, of course, that's the easy bit, or at least much easier. Here we have to create the atmosphere, and I think it's very good that the conductor, someone like Tony, obviously, who is capable in creating an atmosphere within seconds, it's absolutely unique. Tony is perfect in just establishing something within a bar.
Curva!
first two pages before you even open your mouth, and we would have had already something in the box.
Steve, tell me when...
I will do, yes. Huh? I will tell you as soon as he's back.
We're in the sound room, below stairs in the Santa Cecilia Hall, with producers Steve and Johns. Now, Steve, compared to some recording environments you could be locked into for a week, this isn't bad, is it?
Do you know, this is a wonderful hall. It's got this beautifully warm acoustic, very microphone-friendly, actually. You know, things just sound nice here. Voices sound good, orchestras sound great. And also you've got a sense of space and distance. So if you want to record all these offstage choirs and onstage choirs and offstage bands and offstage priestesses and so on, it's a terrific environment to work in.
And the environment we're actually sitting in with all the equipment, the desk and all of the communication stuff. I mean, this isn't a bad room, is it? And using the space, I mean, if we think about the second scene, the end of the first act, the priests and priestesses in the temple, how do you achieve the spatial effects that Verdi is looking for?
The first decision, of course, is distance. How far are you from the main microphones? And what you're trying to do is get the impression of both distance, but you need some sort of clarity as well. You need to be able to pick out certain details. Also, of course, when you're off stage or in distance, you need a sense of tone, of colour. And particularly for the priestesses, this is such an important sound when they're comparing it with this beautiful, lugubrious, warm sound of the tenors and basses. Verdi, in this score, there's so many moments when he does something quite extraordinary. And the idea of the two harps on stage and two harps off stage and how he has interplay between both of those and how then they kind of drive both rhythm and colour.
And another offstage element we've got to talk about is the banda.
The banda are fantastic. I mean, I honestly, when I came to do the recording, I was imagining I'd have 8 or 10 people. There's 40 of them. And of that 40, I mean, we've got clarinets and trumpets and trombones and euphoniums. I mean, I'm told it's a local police band.
Well, it's the real thing, isn't it?
It is a real band. And they are just tremendous. And of course, again, with the spatial effects that you need, they've got to be on stage, they've got to be off stage. They've got to march at one point, effectively, as the great Egyptian army comes back into town. It's the banda who are leading them.
And are you able to do all of that from in here? Or do you have to have a certain amount of movement in the hall as well?
We try and minimise the movement, certainly during takes in the hall, but actually we've got a session coming up tomorrow where we will actually be moving the chorus forward at one stage as they get close in the big judgment scene. And the idea, of course, is that they close in on Radames.
And talk us through the great triumphal scene and how you actually envision that in this space. What sort of decisions you have to make to achieve a recording in?
So, of course, the first thing is you spend some time with Tony Papano, and just working out, because he knows the hall better than anyone else, how are we going to make this work? Because, of course, you want two things. You want just the sheer technicolour sound of the Grand March. I mean, it's one of the most famous bits of Verdi writing, and it should sound absolutely spectacular. So the decisions you're trying to make is, well, I want to be able to hear the banda cutting through. I've got to make my chorus sound like hundreds of Egyptians on stage at one time. I want my Egyptian trumpets, the Aida trumpets, to sound really bright and clear, and also antiphonal. So as you go from this most wonderful key change that of course, that Verdi uses, when he suddenly goes from A flat up into B major, and he goes from one set of trumpets to the other, and we put them either side, so you suddenly have the ear pulled right from one way, right to the other. Okay, they should be on four, the usual one for Jonas, and three for Aida. Yes, there's a number on the stand.
It's number three for you, Anya.
Tell him I'm fine.
Yeah, Giacomo is fine. Yeah.
I'm inside the Santa Cecilia Hall itself right now. You'll be able to feel the change of atmosphere because this is such a live hall. Members of the orchestra are just beginning to come back in for this afternoon's rehearsal. And I'm with the sound engineer for these recording sessions. He's a Roman. He's Giacomo De Caterini. Giacomo, how would you describe the quality of the acoustic inside the hall?
Well, this hall has been designed with a big goal to be the best option available for symphonic work. And we're doing opera, so it's a bit more live than one would expect for this kind of production.
You need a big space for it to happen.
You do.
What are the biggest issues and the biggest problems that you have to solve when you're planning to record an opera the size of Aida in this space?
Offstage bandas, singer that are supposed to come from afar. We are constantly moving microphone, planning for acoustic effects, and trying to put together a work of fiction, sonic-wise, that has to remind listeners what an opera of this size could sound in their home.
Well, I'm here with an Egyptian princess. I'm here with Amneris, Ekaterina Semenchuk. And you, at the beginning of the opera, you have no idea that your personal slave is also a princess.
Actually, the tragedy of Amneris, it's a tragedy of three young people, Rhodomus, Aida and Amneris. The tragedy probably not only in this love triangle, the tragedy because they are very young. And the situation and the time in which they live is also one of important thing which support the tragedy, let's say like that. They have no opportunity actually to speak to each other about the situation because it's impossible.
And when we get to the scene in your apartment where you are suspicious of Aida already, you've seen the way that she and Radames look at one another, and you have to trap her into revealing that she is in love with him.
No, I think Amneris, she catch immediately all these feelings between them, and I think she is a very intelligent woman, Amneris, and she knew it and she felt it before this scene.
And in some ways, you are the most emotionally varied character in this opera, I think, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm very challenged and I'm very lucky because my character of Amneris, she has many colors and many sides, and as a diamond, she has her gentle lines, she has her love lines, she has her jealousy lines, and very soft lines.
Oh,
This is a sound I wasn't expecting in here. It's the sound of one of the members of the Santa Cecilia Orchestra practicing the viola da gamba in the main hall where they've been recording the opera. And I'm here with Alain Lanceron, president of Warner Classics and Erato. Alain, this isn't supposed to happen anymore. Grand opera like Aida being made in studio conditions. What's happened?
But the proof is it does. It does from time to time. It's true that I remember when we recorded years ago at the beginning of the 21st century, the Tristan and Isolde with Antonio Papano and Nina Stemm and Placido Domingo, many people thought it is the last opera recorded on CD audio, because now the new era is video and everything will come on DVD but no longer on audio for the grand repertoire. And actually it proved to be wrong, because now we do Aida. And it's true that it's more and more difficult to make these operas, because there are very few singers able to justify a new recording, because big Verdian or Wagnerian voices are rarer and rarer.
Just got to do mid-phrase. Okay, Irwin, please, because we've done quite a few of them. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 4 or 5. Facciamo dalla quinta battuta di C, where you say terra, okay, and then you come in on la mano, okay? La quinta battuta.
Well, backstage here at the Sala Santa Cecilia, I'm with Erwin Schrott, Ramphis, the chief priest. Now, the way Verdi accompanies Ramphis in the first scene is quite extraordinary. We have this big, rich voice, we have this authority of the priest, and we just have a choir of cellos. It's chamber music.
It's fantastic. Yeah, I'm all the time looking at Sir Antonio Papano, and all the time he's drawing with his hands and with his face. That is, for me, during the period that I'm working with him, there is nothing that makes me more happy than he smiling to me. From the moment that he smiles, it means that the world is completely all right. At the beginning of the scene, from the si corre voce che le ti, you have this wonderful sound of the celli, almost like playing the waves of the Nil, back and forward. And you see as well Papano's hands and arms, that they are drawing those images. It is obviously written by Verdi, but if you don't play around between the lines, it's just it works for all of us, I think. No? You have the duty of drawing something out of your responsibility, out of your own risk as well, to draw something that it is going to be not just notes, which I know that Papano hates. Take a risk, do something.
For me, there's two things. For the when the priestesses are very loud at figure D, they're too present for us, the priestesses, the internal choir. So either they can sing into copies or something, it just suddenly comes across really, really too clearly. Then when they come back again, what you just looked at, the triple P section, they're not, the tuning isn't great between the bottom octave and the top octave. I think that the lower part is a little under. Oh, in Mendelssohn, yeah, okay.
I'm here with the Santa Cecilia Orchestra's concertmaster, Roberto Gonzalez. Now, how would you describe this orchestra as a recording orchestra? Does the orchestra take well to recording and the discipline and the differences and putting something together piecemeal like this and sort of rehearse, record?
Well, I have to say, there's someone to blame for all this to work so well, and that's Papano. Because one of the things that are most difficult for an orchestra, especially if you're recording an opera and you don't record it in order. So actually, in the morning you start with the fourth act, and then after the break you have the second act, and then there's an aria, and then there's a choir. It's very difficult to find the right dramatic temperature. Papano knows these pieces better than anyone in the world, I think. So the fact that before every take, he makes sure that if we're in the third act, we sound as if we had played two acts before. That's why it works so well, because that's what people say. You can never achieve the same degree of intensity in a recording than in a performance. But actually, Papano defies that quite strongly. I think he does it wonderfully.
So Tony, we do this little section in Act 1 now, is that right? And then when do you want to call Anna? Anya, should I give her a 10-minute warning or something? Okay, fine.
I'm with Aida. I'm with Anya Hartaros, and this is the woman the opera is all about. Anya, your first entry, here you are, you're the Ethiopian princess who is a slave girl in Egypt. Nobody knows who you are. In these circumstances, when you're making this recording here, no audience, no costumes, no scenery, but you have this opportunity to rehearse and record, and there's the intimacy of the microphones as well, and different balances. This is an extraordinary opportunity to rethink how you balance the role with the orchestra, I suppose.
Yes, of course. You know that I never have sung the role on stage, and it is really not in my repertory. And all the questions which I had in the past to sing this role, I all negotiated. So I said, no, I will never sing this role on stage. So this is for me just an opportunity to try to work with this role and to feel good in this role. So this studio recording is a fantastic chance to play with the orchestra, to sing this fantastic music, to have really, really good people around me. And but it seems like that we have much time to do it, but we are all stressed. We really, really don't have time to work on this. And, you know, if you sing 6 hours each day this role, you are really, really tired and you need to rest and all. So it's not just fun, but it's fun too.
Thank you.
And what about this orchestra and conductor and chorus, the Santa Cecilia team at home in this hall, and the character of the sound and the colour of the sound? It's quite special, isn't it?
Well, yeah, it seems to. But the problem is that we are soloists standing during the recording behind the orchestra. So we have no really feeling about the hall. You know, we are standing behind it. I think it's a problem of the microphones that they don't have to catch whole orchestra sound. They want to catch just our voices. But the feeling in the hall is beautiful. And sometimes when I sing and they stop and I hear the echo of my voice in this hall, it's really, really a wonderful feeling.
And also a wonderful feeling because a studio opera like this, a recording of a grand opera just for audio, we thought this wasn't going to be possible again on this kind of scale.
Me too. And everybody tells me this is a really, really unique chance to do it, and perhaps the last one because the market has changed. We have just 6 days to do this. And the older recordings had sometimes 3 weeks to do it. And they could go for walking and for eating and everything and to rest and sleeping and relax in between, and we can't. So this is really a difference. The notes are the same.
Everything else has changed.
I don't know why I'm so lucky to be able to continue doing this kind of thing, but I think the title and the sexiness, if you like, of the cast rendered it at least a possibility, a risk worth taking. I think the space is interesting in which to record it, because you need to play around with effects of backstage, and I think here we have the possibilities in this big hall to create distance and yet maintain sort of a reverb around the sound that is not artificial. The cast is just beautiful, and because they are so musical, each one of them, and so gifted lyrically, they can turn this music into the lyrical music it was meant to be. I mean, the tradition has become that Verdi singing, and especially of Aida, has become quite bull in a china shop kind of thing. And I understand why, these, you know, heroes, warriors, and you know, that kind of thing. Big orchestra, massive chorus. And there are big moments, there's no question about it. But I think one has to make the lyricism a priority in this thing, so that then the dramatic moments then can speak for themselves.
Okay, all happy? Yeah. Yeah, we're done.
Sorry. On the previous one. Yeah. Just before the chorus time.
Immense of God!